time for New Media Beat on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm Ethan Ford.
And I'm Jesse Manuel. Welcome to New Media Beat.
From India and Pakistan.
We have news about internet shutdowns in South Asia. Both India and Pakistan have used targeted internet shutdowns in reaction to political unrest. What are the consequences? When is a government justified in shutting down the internet? Is this about public safety or political power? What do the protesters think when their mobile phones can't access the internet?
From Georgia.
Georgia has followed Russia's example and passed a foreign agents law. What are foreign agent law? How are authoritarian governments in Russia, Hungary, and Georgia using them to control the media?
From Japan.
Meta is being sued in Japan for fraudulent investment ads on Facebook and Instagram. Are social media scams a major problem in Japan? Will taking tech giants like Meta to court force the platforms to take down these scams?
From South Korea.
Meta is being sued in South Korea as well as Japan. The issue in South Korea is privacy, not investment scams. Meta is being sued for collecting private user data and using it to target consumers with personalized marketing. Which laws were Meta breaking when they collected all this user data? Can the government protect its citizen from data mining by tech giants like Meta?
From China, we have two reports about the media in China today.
First, we have entertainment news. Microdramas are very popular in China. Short video content is all the rage on the streaming services. What are the most popular microdramas in China? What makes microdramas such a popular form of streaming media? And why is the government nervous about that popularity?
Our second story from China is about the social credit system. What is the social credit system?
Is the social credit system a tool for political control of the population? Is it a form of surveillance? What part does the media play in the social credit system? Can social media posts change your social credit score?
From France.
Why are some families suing TikTok in France? Should TikTok be held liable for the tragic deaths of teen users? Are social media platforms responsible for a mental health crisis and even teen suicide? How can lawsuits change that?
All this and more coming up on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio. Streaming live from the State University of New York College at Old Westbury. Let's talk about the internet shutdowns in South Asia with Emily Famiette and Maria Duran. Emily is here to discuss shutdowns in India, and Maria is going to tell us about the internet in Pakistan. Let's begin with Emily Famiette. Emily, what is an internet shutdown?
An internet shutdown is a government-ordered disruption that limits or stops internet access, often to control information. This will allow the government the opportunity to prevent miscommunication or chaos. Shutdowns of the internet affect people as well as businesses, the economy, and the community as a whole.
What is the reason behind the internet shutdown in India?
Typically, government authorities order internet shutdown in India due to concerns regarding public safety, law and order, or security. One of the reasons India uses internet lockdown is to prevent misinformation from spreading during times of chaos or crisis. Enforcing an internet shutdown will prevent any false news to spread. This will keep stability and trust within their nation. The internet shutdown is put into place for national security to prevent any terrorist attacks. The shutdown allows for clear communication to get to the public with reliable information. Despite India using the shutdown for safety measures, India also uses it for cheating in schools. Cheating has become a big problem in India, and shutting down the internet can reduce the students from digital cheating methods. This will allow students to have credible work and give students the opportunity to have more of a level playing field when it comes to academics. The shutdowns are implemented to maintain order and security.
How does the shutdown affect the people in India?
Many people were affected by the shutdown of the internet. If you think about it, could you imagine if you weren't able to use an internet right now? Seems nearly impossible. Not only for the social media and Texas purposes that internet provides for us, but the ability to keep up to date with what is going on in the world. Many were left in the dark about what was going on in the world around them. The shutdown also limited the ability for families to communicate with one another and keep up to date with what was happening. Many students were unable to get the notifications about school and work deadlines, leaving them behind in their education. Internet shutdowns also impact the economy substantially. The shutdown cost the economy $585.4 million in 2023, when India's shutdown lasted 7,812 hours. The shutdown affected businesses, healthcare, digital transaction, which is why the shutdown has impacted the India economy.
Does this shutdown go against freedom of speech?
I believe, and so do many people in India, think that the internet shutdown is a violation of freedom of speech. People all over the world have the right to access information, especially day-to-day or important information that is going on in the world around them. With the government restricting people's ability to access the news or educational resources, this limits their rights and decisions. With the shutdown, it prevents people from using the internet as a way to use their voice, whether that be political or social. Social media is a great tool to engage in and communicate with people from all over the world, and preventing people from having access to that is going against their freedom of speech. India's government believes the shutdown is used to keep people, military, and the nation safe, and prevent people from hearing misinformation. But is that really better for those people to be left in the dark? 771 internet shutdowns occurred in India between 2016 and 2023. The people of India deserve the right to access whatever they choose on the internet without government interference. For New Media Beat, I'm Emily Femmeletti.
Thanks, Emily. And now we can compare how the government in Pakistan has also been using internet shutdowns. Maria Duran has the news. Maria, is the internet in Pakistan relatively free? What does Freedom House say about internet freedom in Pakistan in its 2024 report?
Pakistan was classified as not free in the 2024 Freedom on the Net report because of severe internet restrictions such as censorship, arrests for online activities, blocking political or social content, and physical attacks on online users. The Pakistani authorities' secretive use of monitoring and surveillance technologies to block content and control internet speeds is a big problem. These actions, like using national firewalls, often go against human rights.
How have the internet shutdowns affected business in Pakistan?
The internet shutdowns have significantly affected businesses in Pakistan by causing delays in file uploads and making websites unresponsive. The disruption has particularly impacted freelancers and companies that rely on fast and reliable internet connections to conduct their work. Industry groups estimate that these issues could cost Pakistan's economy up to $300 million, highlighting the severe financial implications of shutdowns.
Why are digital rights groups concerned about the new surveillance system?
Digital rights groups are worried that the government might be deploying a more advanced surveillance system capable of targeting specific internet components. This system could potentially monitor media shared on messaging apps and trace online messages back to their origins. These concerns are amplified by the government's recent actions against political opponents, leading critics to believe that the state is using digital terrorism as a strategy to control social media and suppress dissent. For New Media Beat, I'm Maria Duran. Back to you, Ethan.
Thank you, Maria. Our next report is about media in Georgia. Not the state of Georgia in the American South, but the nation of Georgia on the shores of the Black Sea, where Eastern Europe and Western Asia meet.
Authoritarian governments in Eastern Europe are using a new type of law to control opposition groups and independent media. These laws are called foreign agent laws. Nationalist governments are very concerned about foreign influence in the media creating political opposition. Do these laws provide transparency and protect the public from foreign influences? Or are they a way to limit political dissent? The first foreign agent law was enacted in Putin's Russia. Viktor Orban's Hungary has a foreign agent law as well. This summer, the government of Georgia passed a transparency on foreign influence bill. In Georgia, this foreign agent law is known as the Russian law. But what is a foreign agent law? What problem is supposed to solve in Georgia? John DeLuso is in Studio A to give us an explanation. John, what is the foreign agent law and how does it work?
The foreign agent law, officially the law of transparency on foreign influence, is a controversial law that was passed in Georgia earlier this year. The law requires companies and groups that receive funding from foreign sources and that carry out political activity to register as a foreign agent. This includes those in the news media. The reason this is a negative thing is because the law implies that the people who register as foreign agents are working against the Georgian government.
Is the media in Georgia free or state-run?
Georgia has both independently owned and state-owned media. Although the Georgian Constitution guarantees free speech, the passing of the foreign agent law severely threatens it. According to Freedom House, Georgia ranks 58 out of 100 on the freedom scale, meaning that the country is partly free. It ranks 2 out of 4 on the press freedom scale, citing pressure from government officials against critical media. Culture and expression have also faced more limitations since the Georgian Dream Party took power.
What does the law mean for the media in Georgia?
The law would have several negative effects on the media in Georgia. According to the International Journalist Network, several journalists have already been anonymously targeted. Nino Zurashvili, a Georgian investigative journalist, was targeted by unknown vandals who spray-painted agent on her car. Posters labeling her as a foreign agent were also put up at her home and her office. Lika Zakashvili, founder of the Georgian news outlet Publika, is taking a strong stand against the law, despite putting herself at risk of the government. She said that the government would use tactics against the publication that threaten the physical and psychological safety of its employees and will use hate speech against them for not following the law. According to OC Media, the foreign agent law also requires the registrants to show employees' salaries, company credit details, payable account details, as well as other sensitive information to the government. The passing of this law has no doubt had a negative reaction from many.
What is the reaction of the independent media and citizens to this law?
The law was met with widespread condemnation from the media and citizens of both Georgia and the wider European Union. Protests took place over the summer outside the Georgian Parliament building. Several of the protesters were Gen Z, who have seen the effects of the similar Russian law that was formerly passed, and protest heavily against the passing of this law. Independent media in Georgia has had a strong reaction against the foreign agent law as well. Many Georgian media outlets feel like the law will have negative effects on the freedom of the press. Nona Kurdovanzi, director of Georgian Young Lawyers, stated, "The Russian law aims not only to stifle civil society and the media, but also to divide citizens and silence critical voices. The media and citizens in Georgia are not backing down against this law and are prepared to continue the fight until the oppressive law is repealed." For New Media Beat, I am John DeLiso. Back to you, Jess.
Thanks, John. My co-host Ethan Ford has a report about media in Japan. The American giant Meta is being sued in Japan because of investment scams on Facebook and Instagram. Ethan, tell us about these scams. What kind of scams are we talking about, and what caused these scams?
Well, besides Meta's platforms hosting the phishing scam advertisement that would lead to a fraudulent interaction online, these investment scams can mostly be attributed to the fact that recently in Japan, the government has encouraged a shift from savings to investments in the equities market, to quote Kyoto News Plus.
How prevalent are these scams?
These scams were originally not that common. According to the National Consumer Affairs Center of Japan, 52 cases were reported back in the 2021 fiscal year, followed the next year by 170 cases, almost doubling the prior year's number. But it was in 2023 when these scams really took off. The NCAC reported 1,629 cases, which is 9.6 times the amount of cases from the prior year, and it appears to be only getting worse.
What is Line?
Line is the platform where the ads lead to and the fraudulent interactions take place. More importantly, though, Line is the most popular social media platform in Japan by far. According to Humble Bunny, Line sees over 95 million monthly users and a user base consisting of 85% of the population. It is larger than Instagram and Facebook combined, both of Meta's platforms in Japan. It's an interesting form of social media, though, because a lot like Google, it offers a lot of different services like news, messaging, posting, and even a PayPal-like application that lets users send money to each other, which is how these scams take place.
Why is Meta the one facing charges?
Meta is facing charges because they are the platform that hosted the fraudulent advertisement. Many feel that they wouldn't have been scammed had they not seen that ad, and summarily blame Meta. What's more interesting, though, is that Line does not appear to be sharing the blame. Although Meta does not appear to agree that it is responsible, and in court quotes Japanese law stating, social media providers are not obligated to exhaustively detect problematic investment advertisements or investigate and confirm the truthfulness of their content. In addition, they mentioned LINE's role and questioned, just as I have, why the blame is not shared. But we are yet to see the outcome of the current filed lawsuit.
What action would the Japanese government take?
A panel of experts from the Japanese Ministry of Internal Affairs is currently in discussion to create preventative measures. In addition, they are pending to propose a bill that, if approved, will make these scams quite a significant issue, which is interesting, as this would be the first time the government actually took action on the scams beyond discussion. For New Media Beat, I'm Ethan Ford. Back to you, Jesse.
Thank you, Ethan. Meta is also being sued in South Korea, but not for the social media scams. In South Korea, the issue is data privacy. Why is Meta being sued for collecting personal data from users in South Korea? What kind of data is being collected?
South Koreans spend a lot of time online. 98% of the population has access to the internet. South Korea was the first nation to roll out 5G. The most popular social media platforms are the domestic messaging app KakaoTalk, with almost 49 million users, and Naver, Korea's version of Google, which has more than 25 million users. Google's YouTube and Meta's Instagram and Facebook are the most popular social media platforms after KakaoTalk and Naver. Facebook has about 25 million users in Korea. The South Korean authorities are upset because Facebook has been illegally collecting personal data from its Korean users and sharing that information with marketers. My co-host, Jesse Manuel, is here to explain. Jesse, what kind of personal data was Facebook collecting, and which laws did Meta break when it gathered this data?
Meta broke the Personal Information Protection Act. Over 980,000 domestic users in South Korea had their sensitive information, including sexual orientation, religious views, and whether or not they were in same-sex relationship. Without the required user authorization, Meta misused the data by exploiting personal information for targeted advertisements.
How much was the fine that South Korean authorities assessed Meta for these violations?
Personal Information Protection Commission said it had decided to fine Meta 21.6 billion won, which in the U.S. would be 15.6 million.
What effects did Meta's data collection methods have on or explicitly target same-sex relationship users?
So the issue to why it's an issue, why the sexual orientation connected with the advertisement, is that in the South, same-sex marriage is not permitted by law, and activists have called for laws that forbid discrimination based on sexual orientation. Experts said that Meta's violation of personal information laws could reflect a growing demand to better identify and target LGBTQ-related markets. But the issue is that not many people are out, so it's infringement on their personal well-being.
How did the South Korean government protect its citizens from data collection?
There's an agency called the Personal Information Protection Commission, PIPC. The South Korean watchdog said it had also ordered the company to establish legal grounds for processing sensitive information, implement safety measures, and respond diligently to users' requests for access to their personal data. Users must be informed if their data has been compromised. On one hand, it highlights the weaknesses and obligations of social media platforms to safeguard user information. However, it calls into question the degree to which national governments need to control and monitor these platforms in order to protect user security and privacy. For New Media Beat, I'm Jesse Manuel. Back to you, Ethan.
Thank you, Jesse. Let's talk with Victoria Lapkowitz about streaming media in China. The most popular form of content on the streaming services is microdrama. What makes microdramas so popular with Chinese audiences? Microdramas are so popular that they are attracting the attention of the government. The government is concerned that the content of the microdramas is a cultural threat. Victoria, let's start with the basics. What platforms carry microdramas?
In China, Kazao is quite prominent. There's Kazao would account for over 60% of the most popular microdramas released last year. Duon is another app that comes from China. The app is similar to TikTok, but is only available in China. Bilibili is a Chinese network that has recently entered the microdrama game this year. There's also American competitors such as Platelet and Real Short who make their own content.
How are microdramas different from other forms of entertainment?
Since microdramas are intensely shorter than other forms of entertainment, such as TV shows and movies, they tend to get more viewers. As an anonymous viewer would state that I can finish several episodes in a minute, even between doing things. Microdramas are able to keep the storyline more intense and dramatic because they don't have to rely on dragged out plot lines just to meet the certain time requirement. Since the budget value and length of the episode, the microdrama industry are able to release new content faster than the average entertainment industry. According to NextShark, microdramas are usually filmed in 10 days and usually have a budget of $41,000 to $69,000 compared to the months and millions it takes for the traditional movie show or TV. Microdramas also have an inventive way of making profit. The apps allow the viewer to watch a few episodes for free before demanding payment to finish the show. According to Born by a Past, this is an inventive way as it allows the creator to see the theme or genre that the consumers want the creators to be aware of, instead of the standard industry, entertainment industry, where they release content and hope to get attention.
Why does China have a problem with microdramas?
According to Time Magazine, at the end of 2022 to February 2023, China's Radio and Television Administration took over 25,000 shows down for having X-rated and controversial contact. The government would state that they were concerned with the content that microdramas were releasing. For example, one of the shows called Teacher Don't Run showed explicit sexual contact that goes against the government's idea of good media. According to Ratty, all shows as of June 2021 would require a web series distribution license, whereas before, they would only need the approval of the streaming platform. This license would appear before a TV or movie starts. According to the RFA, sexual contact is not the only topic in China that is looking to be taken down. Censors have gotten rid of shows that shows fights between in-laws as they create extreme emotions. President Xi Jinping hopes that removing this contact would persuade the younger generation to go to the idea of marriage and having children, as the country's birth rates have been low recently. According to Global Times, a paper owned by the Communist Party, as of June 2024, microdramas would have to go to certain regulations or face backlash. These regulations would hold the creators and platforms responsible for the content release. According to Chinese netcast service, microdramas whose show's production is over 1 million yuan is to be released and managed by the National Radio and Television Administration, who are responsible for overlooking media in China. The microdramas who have a less production value are said to have been managed by other media departments. Platforms may face backlash if they don't work with these new regulations. The penalty of not going through with the government demands are facing a certain penalty such as backlash. The standards are said to be put in place to stop the spread of vulgar and harmful content. Current Affairs Chang Guanti would state that the government is just embarrassed of the contact, and the government would want the idea of more positive contact. For New Media Beat, I'm Victoria Lackwitz. Back to you,
Ethan. Thank you, Victoria. We have more news about China up next. Have you heard of the government's social credit system? What makes your score grow? How does this government use the social credit system? What happens if it's a negative score? Does media use play a role in the social credit score?
The government of China keeps an eye on its citizens. It is an authoritarian government that uses the latest in surveillance technology to monitor dissent. One way that the government keeps an eye on the people is the social credit system. What does this social credit system have to do with the internet and social media? Tylin Lusane has an explanation for New Media Beat. Tylin, what is a social media credit system?
So a social credit system is kind of like a score that tracks your behavior and things like following the law, being environmentally friendly, what you post or how you portray yourself on social media, or just how you interact with society. So basically, the social credit system rewards you for doing good things, and if you mess up, it could limit your access to certain benefits or opportunities. It's kind of like a reputation score, but for your whole life, and it's used to encourage people to act in ways the government or society thinks is acceptable.
How is China using social credit?
In China, the social credit system is used to track people's behavior and give them scores based on things like paying bills on time, obeying the law, or even online activity. If you have a high score, you'll get perks like easier access to loans, faster travel, or even discounts. But if your score drops, maybe because of breaking laws or getting in trouble, you might face restrictions like being banned from certain flights or trains. It's a way for the government to encourage good behavior and discourage things they see as negative, all by tying it into this score that impacts your daily life. The social credit system in China also looks at how you act online, like what you post on social media. If you're sharing positive government-approved content or following the rules, your score can go up. But if you post things that are seen as negative or controversial, like criticizing the government or spreading rumors or misinformation, your score could drop. That can lead to consequences like being restricted from traveling, like I said, or having trouble getting loans.
Why did China decide to start using social credit?
China started using the social credit system to try to encourage good behavior and maintain social order. The idea was to create a way to reward people who follow the rules and punish those who don't, so society as a whole would be more trustworthy and orderly. They also wanted a system that could help control things like fraud, deviance online, corruption, or even people breaking laws without facing serious consequences. It's partially about making sure people feel responsible for their actions, both offline and online, by tying their personal behavior to their access to services and opportunities.
What are the concerns?
The main concerns with the social credit system in China are privacy and control. Critics are worried it gives the government too much power to monitor and influence people's lives, especially since it tracks not just things like criminal behavior, but also what people post online or how they interact in everyday situations. There's a fear that it could lead to unfair penalties for minor mistakes, like people getting punished for expressing opinions or making personal choices that don't align with government preferences. It also raises questions about who decides what counts as good or bad behavior, and how easy it is to manipulate systems. Another thing is taking social media posts too seriously. If you post something that someone sees as negative, and you just meant it as a joke, your score can drop as well. So overall, it's seen as a way to tightly control and track citizens in ways that could limit personal freedom. For New Media V, I'm Tylin Lusane. Back to you, Jesse.
Thanks, Tylin. Up next, we have media news from France brought to us by Nelson Benitez. Nelson has found a news story about TikTok. It seems that some families in France are suing TikTok. Nelson, why are these families suing TikTok?
So these French families, which are seven different families in total, are suing TikTok over blaming the social media platform for having a factor in the death of two teenagers in France. They said through a representative, TikTok is being sued by seven families in France who accuse the social media giant of exposing children to harmful content, leading two to take their own lives. The case alleges the video's platform algorithm exposed them to content promoting self-harm, eating disorders, and suicide. said a lawyer of the family, according to BBC. These families believe that the different content that TikTok was showing influenced the decisions of the two teenagers that ultimately took their lives, tragically. The lawsuit alleges that TikTok's algorithm exposed the seven families' teenagers to videos promoting suicide, self-harm, and eating disorder. This is what they told France 24 as well. So basically, they feel like TikTok has a very big influence, being that they're probably one of the most well-known and famous platforms at the moment. And they feel like they are not doing enough to kind of monitor their For You page and what they're being shown to teenagers, specifically like minors and all that. So they feel like they have the biggest responsibility in why these teenagers took their lives.
Has TikTok had a history of being sued for similar issues?
Yeah, so many social media platforms have faced backlash from this controversial topic for many years, including TikTok. They recently stated on Reuters, TikTok, like other social media platforms, have long faced scrutiny over the policies and security of its content on its app. As with Meta / Facebook and Instagram, it faces hundreds of lawsuits in the United States accusing them of enticing and adding on to millions of children to their platform, damaging their mental health. Society blames these social medias based on the content that is accessible and the content that may be seen on the For You page, which picks out content shown for you. While the content on the For You page is mostly based around the algorithm, like what it thinks you like, it does bring into question the exact content that is being shown and if that influences people in a harmful way. The case alleges the video platform's algorithm exposed them to content promoting the same disorders and suicidal behaviors. They told French media that the lawsuit was the first of its kind in Europe. TikTok, which is one of the world's most popular social media platforms at the time, said that it has not received any notifications of legal proceedings related to these claims, according to BBC. So this is the first lawsuit against TikTok in Europe, but not the first in the world. TikTok was actually just recently sued in October of this year in the United States for similar issues, according to CNN. TikTok was being sued by 14 attorneys, including one in New York, of the general's office over alleged harm to children's mental health as well.
What can TikTok and other social media do to prevent or aid in spreading awareness and stopping possible future incidents?
Many people, including the families that are suing TikTok, believe that TikTok and other social media platforms can do more to prevent harmful content from being seen, especially to teenagers. The families that are suing stated that they want TikTok to become more strict in this area to ensure a safer viewing environment for teenagers. They said the parents want TikTok's legal liability to be recognized in court, adding that this is a commercial company offering a product to consumers who are, in addition, minors. They must therefore answer for the product's shortcomings. This was stated to France 24, which is a French media outlet. They believe that the lack of attention and safety measures is not only what led to the tragic event, but could also lead to damage and other dangerous situations for teenagers as well. Many social media sites claim that they are taking measures to protect teenagers. The companies of TikTok has previously stated that it took issues that were linked to children's mental health seriously. The CEO told this USA lawmakers this year that the company had invested in measures to protect young people who were using the app. So they're trying to do measures, but the question is if they should do more is something that needs to be asked as well. And what could they do? Like, I know nowadays they have a restriction to, like, if you try to go live, you can be, you have to be over like certain age, you have to be over 18 to do that. So I guess they're trying to do that just in a sense that going live, like, you are meeting random people. It does expose you to more stuff, but there's always a question of can they do more to protect everybody in general. For New Media Beat, I'm Nelson Benitez. Back to you, Jesse.
Thank you, Nelson. That's all for this week.
Thanks for listening. New Media Beat is produced by Gabriel Gambuza and John Avish Ripathi. Our engineer is Jade Nunez. My co-host is Jesse Manuel. Thank you, Jesse.
Thanks, Ethan. Today we heard reports from Nelson Benitez, John DeLuso, Maria Duran, Emily Femmeletti, Ethan Ford, Victoria Lapkowitz, Tyon Lasan, and me, Jesse Manuel.
New Media Beat is brought to you by OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, and the Media and Communication Department here at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest posts at newmediabeat.org, where you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed. Stay tuned for more great programming coming up next on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio.